Hey, welcome to the 29th episode of the Deep Hacker Cast podcast, where you can learn how to hack even if you're getting started today. My name is David, and I will be your host, your only host, for now at least. Maybe one day I can get someone else on the show to add some opinions and insights, but until then, I'm your only host, which means one thing, I'm always right, because there's no one here to tell me, there's no one here to tell me otherwise. And let's see now. So I haven't recorded in a while. Many of you have been wondering what happened to the show. Well, obviously it's still here, but you know, if you're looking for a reason why it took so long to come out with the new episode, it's because I've been pretty busy with some new awesome things. First of all, if you stay till the end of the show, if you can bear to listen to me for however long this is going to go on for, then I'll tell you something cool I've been working on. It's called the MrCracker.com Inner Circle. And then the other thing I've been working on is a new business. So I moved down to Boston with a couple friends. And, well, actually, they're my business partners now. But we started a business to make applications, you know, smartphone applications like iPhone applications and Android applications for local businesses in this area. It's been fun, very challenging in the beginning, but you know, we're having progress. So it's I'm an entrepreneur, and I love to work on new things. So that's what I'm doing. If any of you are here in the Boston area, you know, give me a shout out. Maybe we can go ahead and get some coffee or a beer or a fruitcake. Anyways, let's get back into what it is the show is about. So, the latest hacker news of this week. Actually, this is probably not the latest news, since I collected this about half a month ago when I decided to record the podcast and, you know, took a little bit longer to get to it. But either way, it's interesting, and maybe you haven't heard of it. The first one up, U.S. government pays $250,000 for iOS exploit. Damn. So, the government is buying exploits. You might be wondering, why does the government need exploits? Very simple, to get into your phone. Imagine the possibilities. You have an exploit that no one knows about, which gives you access to pretty much anybody's phone that you want to target, pulling up their information in an instant without having to, you know, apply for a warrant or wait for all that crap. You know, boom, they're into your phone. So, I mean, what else would they need it for? Obviously, to stopping terrorists is what they'll tell you. But it's interesting to be here because they have a chart how much the government is willing to pay for exploits. And not just the government, but a lot of different organizations. Let's see here. At the very bottom of the list is Adobe Reader for PDF exploits. So we have $5,000 to $30,000. Mac OS X, $20,000 to $50,000. And then the Android phone platform, $30,000 to $60,000. Then let's skip over to the very end here. The Chrome browser and Internet Explorer, so about $80,000 to $200,000. Wow. And then at the very top of the list, iPhones, $100,000 to $250,000 per exploit. So if you guys are good at finding new exploits, and you know, you can put that stuff together, this is a pretty awesome business if you can find the right seller. Actually, a lot of people are starting to sell to government contractors and just the government in general, because it's a lot less riskier than selling to the mafia or these organized criminal organizations where, you know, one wrong word or anything to have anything where, you know, the person can change his mind and then decide he'll just kill you instead. Boom, dead. Bye bye. But that was an interesting article. Next, we have Chinese hackers arrested for leaking 6 million logins. So, this dude, let's see what his name is, Zhang, he pretty much hacked into the CSDN, which is the China Software Developer Network, which does things like host blogs, does IT news, host web forums. But either way, they have 10 million registered users, so it's one of the largest developer communities in China, and he went ahead and leaked all this information. And it seems like, from reading this article, that they were not encrypting the user information. So it's just plain old emails, usernames, logins for millions of people. If you think that you might have been part of this attack, you can go to this awesome service they have. It's called Pwned List. And what it does is basically you type in your name or maybe an email of yours, and it'll go ahead and bring up a list, and it'll let you know if you have been part of a attack and if your information has been leaked at some point in the past couple of years. They basically go out there and grab all the database dumps that hackers put out there that they've hacked and added to their list every time there's a big hack or there's a big database dump. All right, last up we have celebrity hacker suspects to plead guilty. So this year-long investigation of a celebrity hacker that authorities dubbed this case Operation Hackerazzi. You know, how clever. Anyways, it resulted in the arrest of Christopher Cheney. I wonder if he's related to Dick Cheney. Anyways, he's pleading to 9 felonies. That's crazy. And he can get up to 60 years in prison for getting into celebrity emails and whatever else they have out there, their phones, I guess. Some of the celebrities were Christina Aguilera, Scarlett Johansson. I guess he leaked a bunch of nude photos of Scarlett. I guess that'll do it. You know, give you 60 years in prison. But I'm not sure what state this is. I might have mentioned it, because I know that, if I'm not mistaken, some of these states in the U.S. still have a law where if you get 3 felonies, you get life in prison. Talk about fail. So it's crazy. It was probably even a simple attack, just sending them an email with some phishing page and grabbing their, tricking them into filling out a form that looks like the actual login form of the website. He's getting up to 60 years in prison. And the funny part is, he could have probably gotten away with it if he hadn't bragged about it on a website. And that's how he brought attention to himself. He actually went out there and started bragging about it. People got to get recognition, right? You got to do what you got to do. That's the news for this week, which is probably a month ago week. Either way, interesting stuff. Gets you thinking and aware of things that are going on. Let's get into the main topic now. This week's main topic is on CSRF, or cross-site request forgery. You might have heard it as XSRF, or the one-click attack, or maybe session writing. All these are used for this attack. But the most common is CSRF, so cross-site request forgery. And what this attack allows an attacker to do is execute unwanted actions on a web application on behalf of another user that's authenticated. So basically another user that's logged into that website. So these unwanted actions might be logging out, change a password, send a message, send money, buy something. So if it's a bank, you know, send money. It's whatever. These requests are just actions that the website is able to do. So if you're logged into Facebook, it could be something like sending a message or adding a friend or removing a friend. So it allows an attacker to execute these unwanted actions on a web app on behalf of that user that's authenticated or logged in. So let's look at why this attack works. Well, instead of verifying that a request, so anything you can do on that website, like login or something, send a password, change password, send a message, whatever this website allows you to do, so this request, so instead of verifying that this request came from an authorized user, websites only verify that the request came from the browser of the authorized user, and this allows a couple loopholes which allow this attack. So let's look at how this attack would work. So let's say we have a user who is authenticated on site A. So this user is logged into site A. An attacker tricks this user into loading site B. So the attacker tricks the user that's authenticated to site A to open his website, site B. Or he can just find a way to insert code into the site that the user visits, so site A, and that could be through cross-site scripting, XSS, etc. But let's just say for this example that user logs into site A, an attacker gets the user to load his website, which contains malicious code. This code on site B sends a request to site A, telling it to do something on behalf of the user, and then site A mistakenly assumes that the user actually authorized that request and allows it to go through. So let's look at this in a more simpler example. Let's say we have a user. User is logged into Facebook. Now, the attacker wants the user to send a message to someone and say something bad. So what happens is this attacker gets the user to open his website. And on this website, we have some code that basically is the string that sends a request to Facebook to send a message to somebody. And when the user opens up this page, the attacker's page, it sends this request to Facebook on behalf of the user logged into Facebook and forces him to send or her to send a message to whoever the attacker wanted to send the message to. So, how does the attacker get this code? How does the attacker send this request on behalf of the user? Well, there's a few ways. Now, when you click on send message and you choose who you want to send the message to, and you click, you type in the message, and you click submit, what happens is this information, this message, is sent through the URL link to a certain page that handles the sending of this script, the sending of this message. Now, all the attacker has to do is figure out what this URL is. And it's generated, this URL is generated when the user hits submit on the web form to send a message. And then it sends it usually via post. This form usually sends it via post, so you don't see what this URL is in the browser. So you can't just copy it from the browser URL bar and have it. You actually have to use a program like TamperData, which basically, once you start running it, it basically kind of, you can say, sniffs what's happening when you click submit, and it saves everything and shows it to you. So when you hit submit, what TamperData will do is show you exactly what you submitted just now in URL format. And then you kind of copy this URL, and this is the URL you want the user, this is the URL the attacker wants the user to run. So how does the attacker get the user to run this URL? Well, there's a couple ways. The attacker can get the user to click on the link, on that specific link, and then if the user is logged into Facebook, it'll go ahead and send that message, and the user won't even know that he sent that message. But the act of getting the user to click on that link, you know, might be more difficult than the other options. So the easier options is just getting the user to open your web page, and on this web page, you can have an image. An HTML image, and instead of by using the image tags and the HTML image tags, instead of inserting a URL of an image, you insert that URL that sends the message into it. And what happens is when the attacker opens that web page with that image tag, instead of loading an image, it loads that page, and automatically, just by visiting that web page, the user who's logged into Facebook sends that request to Facebook and basically sends a message without even knowing it. You can also use the JavaScript script tag, script src, or you can load the whole web page, that link, that URL, to send a message within an iframe on the web page that the user visits, so the attacker's website. So there's a bunch of cool different ways to go about doing this attack. So, and it's a very, very simple attack if the web page is vulnerable to CSRF. Nowadays, you know, big websites like Facebook, you know, they prevent this type of attack. But it's crazy. I went out there and I started searching for random websites that run, you know, their own systems, their own content management systems, PHP scripts, whatever. And the amount that are vulnerable to CSRF is extraordinary. It's not difficult finding a website that's vulnerable to CSRF. Let me show you an example of when I first learned the method, when I first read about it and wanted to try it out. What I did was I had a fan page for a game, and a web-based game, and on this fan page I had, you know, a bunch of users always visiting. And the thing about these users was that they were always, it was a cheat site for this game. And the thing about the people visiting this website is that they were always logged into the main game. And there's, in the game, you can send money. You can send money to, you know, their fake game money to any user you wish. And I found the URL to send money. So basically, it was a simple URL, you know, sendmoney.php, and then you insert the username and then the amount of money. So it's all in one URL. The way I did it is I used TamperData. I filled out the form. I want to send 50 coins to this user. I hit submit, and it saved the form to me. TamperData saved the URL that was created from that form. So I copied that URL, I replaced the username with my username, and I made it the maximum amount of coins that you can send possible. And I just simply inserted the image tag, HTML image tag, and this link onto my fan page. And then before I knew it, within, you know, 20 minutes of me updating my website, I started receiving just this money coming in instantly. So it was kind of crazy cool how this simple attack can, you know, do a lot of damage. But you know, if you're interested in learning more about this, just do a couple of Google searches. Or if you're part of the MrTracker.com inner circle, I have a huge course on this that covers absolutely everything about it, and that you can actually go ahead and practice this attack on my website. So you might be wondering, how do I prevent this attack? Well, there's a few different methods, but the one that's mostly used right now is the token method. And this token is a random string that basically the site owner has on each form, in each kind of place where the user can do something on the website, some sort of function. And what happens is when a user logs into the website and a session is created for that user that allows them to stay logged in, at the same time, a token is created for this user and stored in his session as part of his session. And then when that user is sending out a form or submitting some sort of information, it compares that request that comes in once the user hits submit, or if maybe it's a CSRF attack and it comes from somewhere else. What happens is the submitted information is submitted with the token of that user. And if, let's say, someone sent it from somewhere else, it'll basically take the user's token and compare it to the request that was submitted. And if that token compares, if it's the same, the request goes through. But if it's different, or it doesn't have a token with the submitted information, then they know it's false. So, you know, if the user is submitting the information from the website, then it'll go through. But if the user didn't submit it from the website, and he kind of just, fell for the CSRF attack, and is on a website of an attacker that's sending requests on his behalf, you know, that request might not have a token, and then, you know, or it might have a token, and it might not be the same. And at that point, the website will not let it go through because it doesn't match up. But there's a bunch of different ways. You can simply Google how to prevent cross-site request attacks, cross-site request forgery attacks, and you'll come up with a bunch of solutions. So that's it for this week's main topic, and I'll see you in the next section. This week's hacker website is pentestify.com. It's a website full of awesome projects, including tools for security and hacker purposes, and just some great coding stuff. They talk about code, they talk about security, they talk about hacking, and they also have a blog where they post a bunch of cool articles. So check them out, pentestify.com. If you have any recommendations for a great security or hacker-related website, send me an email at comments@mrcracker.com, and I'll be sure to mention it on the show if I already haven't. So go ahead and do that now. Do it now. Like, stop. Go now, okay? So what are you still doing here? So I mentioned in the beginning of the show that I've been working on a really cool thing called the MrCracker.com Inner Circle. Well, I just want to let you all know that it is open and allowing people to join at this time. You can find it at MrCracker.com/inner-circle. And the best thing about it is that I'm offering a Mother's Day discount coupon. So if you type in MomDay50 into the checkout page, you'll get 50% off the membership. But for those of you who don't know what it is, go ahead, go to the blog, go to MrCracker.com, and you'll see a post about the Mother's Day discount. Click on that, and I'll describe to you exactly what the MrCracker.com Inner Circle is, and you can decide for yourself if this is something you want to be part of. But in a quick summary, it's basically a membership website where a bunch of people that want to learn security and hacking join, and I put out many great courses. Every single month I add a new course to what's already there, and you can learn how to hack through audio courses, video courses, text, and then I allow you to practice everything you learn through hackercises, and you can actually practice what I preach and allowing you to really learn that topic. Also, there's a big community of people that you can speak with who share the same interest, and you can get help from them or from me, and you get direct access to me. I'm always there to help you out no matter what, because I get millions of emails. Well, not millions, obviously. Let me go with hundreds. I get hundreds of emails on a weekly basis, and I can't reply to all of them. But if you are part of the if you're part of the MrCracker.com Inner Circle, then I will always be there to answer your questions. So once again, MrCracker.com/inner-circle. You can check out the information about it on the MrCracker.com website. There's a post about Mother's Day. So that's it for episode 29 of the CrackerCast podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It's been a while. I'm still getting back into this. But if you did like it and you're not part of my newsletter, then you can go to MrCracker.com and look on the right-hand side. There is an email opt-in form. Put in your name and email address. Hit submit. and then verify your email address just to make sure that it's you who submitted that form. And then every week I'll send you an email with the latest hacker news and stories, and I'll let you know when there's a new episode out. So yeah, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to email me at comments@mrcracker.com. You know, hate mail is accepted as well. Otherwise, I'll see you at the next episode.